This is RSVB Update, episode 420, recorded Friday, July 5th, 2013, Dwarves and Dead Mice. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSVNB Update. Thank you for joining us this week. This week, Alex43 is here with me. He is a member of RSVNB Informer.
Yeah.
Now, you don't sound too happy about that.
Of course I am happy, man. What are you talking about? What's up, noobs?
Well, that's definitely an interesting introduction, Dub. And we are fairly certain that the vast majority of you guys out there are not noobs. But, anyways.
That was to the noobs out there, because since the majority of you are not noobs, I didn't want them to feel left out.
Okay. Fair enough.
And so, hello to the rest of you. Delayed. The noobs get service. You don't. Haha.
That's all right. So this week is a update in which something that has been requested for quite some time for a certain segment of the RuneScape population. This week, we are indeed talking about Virago, which is probably the highest level and most complex boss that has ever been introduced into RuneScape.
Exciting.
Have you gone to give this a try at all?
I've only gone so far as to enter the cave and chat with the big guy.
Okay.
He's actually quite friendly.
Oh, that's good. I guess until you start hitting him, then. That would be,
of course.
For those of you guys out there who do not know, I am not one of the best PVM type people out there, so I, of course, didn't even bother trying to go slay this creature. But nonetheless, we are fully versed in his mechanics and what he drops. And if there is a desire out there to have a more in-depth process on how to fight him, we will do a RSVNB update focus on that, just purely because the amount of people required to fight this thing is at a minimum of 5, and there's so many different stages to it, and they all require a bit of a different strategy, especially with regard to the combat abilities that need to be used. So if you are looking for an in-depth feature on how to do this, post it in the topic for this episode, and we'll see what we can do about that as soon as possible. Now, with that being said, Virago is simply a rock, isn't he?
Well, a big giant rock man thing.
Yeah.
If anything, he more resembles the balance elemental.
Oh, okay. I never thought of that. I thought he was more like the living rock patriarchs, I guess you could say.
A little bit. He actually talks about him. You mentioned the living rocks, and he says, "I know of them, but I'm not of them." He says something like that. But yeah, you can go down there, you can chat with the big guy. It's like a big giant face just peeking out from the cliff, and you can chat with him for a bit and leave if you want. Doesn't matter. It's pretty safe in there. You actually have to physically initiate the battle with him by saying, "I want to fight you." And he's like, "Okay."
Does he, is there any information given as to more about the lore behind him? Like, what exactly?
He does talk about himself a little bit. He does talk about himself a little bit. He says that he's sort of the earth, and because there's war and stuff going on, he kind of wants to prepare himself to face off against the gods should they ever have to threaten him. And so what he does is he invites you to fight him if you're strong enough, if you're worthy enough to face him.
Okay. And his level, I think, is on the order of 270, if I remember correctly, which is pretty big these days. He attacks primarily with melee and magic, of course, because, you know, he is a rock. So you should keep that in mind when you go to him. But as I said, we will have more information on that if the listener base does so desire a complex guide on how to successfully take him down.
To which we may actually have to successfully take him down.
Good yeah, luck. And you know, I know people who have done it, and they would be more willing to come on the show and do that. So it's just time didn't allow this week, and there was lots of issues with him when he came out that it made the one day there very, very hard to actually get anything meaningful done when he first came out. But we'll talk about that a bit later, perhaps, in one of the questions. So north of Falador, you just go in there, talk to him. There's a couple of agility shortcuts that you need to go over. Melee and magic attacks, all AoE, so you need to watch out for that. But as I said, more info on that will be coming. There are five phases to him, hence why he is also very, very formidable.
And if you're worried about dying and losing your stuff, he actually has his own graveyard that your grave will spawn in. So all you have to do is just run back there and then just seek your grave out from the millions of others that are probably there as well if you're in with the team.
So did you give it a go at all and die anyways, or did you just walk away?
Nah, I just walked away. I'm smart.
Okay. So.
There was even a clan there. I probably could have just jumped in with them just for the heck of it, but I decided against it. Didn't have time.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'd like to do. I'd like to go on some of these PVM trips like this, next, this guy, just to kind of get my feet wet, because I really haven't done any of that since the God Wars first came out, and, you know, it seems as though most everything nowadays, in order to be done successfully for a decent amount of time, you know, not just one kill and then go away, you kind of do need to have good enough gear to begin with, and I'm cheap when it comes to that because I like to hoard my money for other things. So.
Oh yeah.
But now that we know a bit about him, is there anything else that we need to talk about pertaining to the actual NPC himself?
Aside from the fact he's the only biggest thing that the only other thing I'm kind of interested in this is how his drops work. Apparently what happens is that he's got five different drops and they go to basically the MVPs of whoever killed him. So technically you could just jump in and then fight him, and there really wouldn't be any skin off anyone's nose because they'll probably get a drop anyways if they're really good.
And you know, that's right. That's another thing that did come up. As part of the requirements for a trimmed completionist cape, you must successfully kill him. So people were wanting that tweak to be part of participating in the kill and not exactly having to be the one that deals the finishing blow. Like you said, if you're there with a whole group of 10 to 20 people, that could get kind of hard with that many people and that much DPS going out kind of random about when yours actually hits. But you are right in that it gives the drops out. Five people picked from a list of 10 receive drops.
But hang on a second, is it really the last hit that makes the kill? Like, it's not the person who does the most damage?
Well,
because I thought that's how it usually was with bosses, is that whoever did the most damage gets the kill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're right on that. I'm sorry. But let me just quote here from the official description on it. Two players from each phase are chosen, the player who acted as a tank and the player who performed the most damage. So the tank and the damage get some reward.
Yep, so the guy who gets the most damage taken to them and the guy who dishes out the most damage.
And then if one or neither of these players survive until the end of the fight or have left, one of the other players who took part will be chosen. It is then randomly decided which of these two players will receive the drop. It is possible, but rare, that one person could get all five drops. There are three rolls for the items. One for the Wand of Singularity, one for the summoning stone, and third for the remaining drops. So let's start with this here, with this as the rewards. So first things first, the first roll for the wand or the singularity. Now these are the two main pieces of equipment that actually come from the NPC itself. The seismic wand and the seismic singularity are 90 magic wand and offhand, respectively, started at the huge grand exchange price of 500 million and 300 million.
Wow.
Which is pretty insane when you think about it.
Well, for a wand and an orb, that must be pretty incredible. Yeah. It must be very incredible weapons.
Well, they're typical level 90, you know. 2458 accuracy, of course, depending on what spell you're using. So if you're using
And the orb lets you cast spells extra fast?
Yeah, it's just like any other dual-handed offhand wand or offhand book. You can cast two at the same time.
Nice.
So that's how that works. But Starting at 300 million and 500 million for the yuan is pretty expensive. Definitely going to be interesting to see what these do in the coming week or so on the exchange. Those of you guys who were with us for the Calphite King update will remember that the Calphite King item started at a similar price and then, of course, have since gone down quite a bit. So over time, we can say that will happen. Now, these also, like items that have come out in the past, will degrade. So, and then they really? Can be repaired at Bob's Axes or a player-owned house armor stand, depending. So,
Bob fixes everything.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, in a way, it seems as though this is kind of a modern money sink for the game going this way. Just because so many people are using these types of items that degrade right now, why not take a bit of money out of the game and have
It's a good thing
option.
Because if these items didn't degrade, then that would be the only kinds of weapons that everybody else would use, as opposed to if they degraded, then you sort of want to use it sparingly, but at the same time keep a lesser weapon available for when you don't want to spend that much, or when you don't want to kill stuff with the weapons and then make them degrade.
Yeah, and the full cost to repair the wand once it's degraded is 3 million GP.
Depending on what you do with it, you can get that money back easily just by kills alone if you use it right.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And of course, the cost is halved if you're 99 smithing and you use the player-owned house portal. Or armor stand, I mean.
Yeah. You don't use a portal to fix stuff. That kind of does the opposite.
Yes, that's right.
I tried it once. It didn't go very well. I got sued from somebody in Varrock because I threw my maul out.
All right. So those are the first two items that come from this. The second one is mentioned is the Summoning Stone. This is a rare drop you can get from Virago on the second roll. And this one has the ability to create a pet, a Vitalis pet. It's purely cosmetic. Just kind of say you were there and you fought Virago, I guess. So there's no stats on it. Summoning level 1.
You get a mini Virago following you around. I think that's pretty sweet and says by itself.
Yep. So there's that. And then next up is where things get interesting in my view. They also brought out the level 90 magic armor with this. Now, we already have level 90... armor from the ports, I think. Which one is from the ports, the magic one? Do you know? I forget.
Shoot, Tetsu is melee. The Death Lotus is... I forgot.
Yeah, what's the third
one? It's like Sea Singer or something like that. No,
yeah,
it's not.
Something like that. Anyways, so we got the port armor, which I believe is tank armor. So, as a result, this armor... Or no, what the heck am I talking about? Port armor is level 85. So this is level 90 power armor. So it's not as strong as a piece of tank armor would be, which is all right, I guess, because there's really not that much power armor in the game right now. So it's nice to see this coming out for magic.
Yep.
But
so it's a new power armor, nice.
Yeah, and now, as I said, this is where it gets interesting, because you create this armor by using the pieces of tectonic energy that are dropped from Virago. Each one of these requires a certain amount of tectonic energy. 14 for the mask, 28 for the robe bottom, and 42 for the top. So you combine this with a stone of binding, which you can get from the Magic Guild, which is 500k in itself. And then when you combine these, you get the piece of armor. And they each require a certain rune crafting level. 91 for the mask, 92 for the bottom, and 93 for the robe top.
Not bad.
So there you go. That's the new use of rune crafting out there. But here's why it's interesting. You cannot be assisted when you make this armor. So in order to make this armor, you need to have 91, 92, and 93 rune crafting.
Oh, so they're kind of conjoining runecrafting with magic.
Exactly.
I like it.
So, you know, you and I come from the olden days when runecrafting was used to make runes, and the holy grail of any runecrafter was getting to 91 runecrafting for double nature runes.
And that was one that was very profitable back then, too.
Yeah, which of course really isn't profitable now. So, you know.
And now we have the rune spam, which makes runecrafting just so darn easy to do anyways, that it really doesn't matter anymore.
So I'm kind of, I don't know how I feel about using runecrafting in order to make armor, but I guess the one side of this that I'm happy about is that it does force people to be well-rounded in game and not just focus purely on combat.
Well, it's really nothing new. I mean, you use runecrafting to make the Sea Singer armor, so.
Yeah.
It works as well.
Yeah, and you know, like we said with Runespan, it's really, really easy now to get the high level armor. So
can the skill be boosted at all?
You know, I think like the only runecrafting boost is the spicy stews.
There's also a boost if you go to Dorgash Khan, if you talk to Oldak, that dude, every so often you're able to, you can talk to him, you ask him, what have you learned, and he may boost your runecrafting by 2 points.
Oh, okay.
But it's sort of like a mini stew of Doom, except you can do it over and over again as much as you want.
Yeah, but that would be pretty random.
It is fairly random, but it's still quite common to get plus two.
Yeah. All right. You know, I guess it's all right, but always interesting to see how these updates come out and wonder how many people this is going to make go train runecrafting. That's what I was wondering when I first read this. So
more masses in the runespan. Yay.
Yeah. All right. So that effectively covers the rewards of Virago. It's nice that the armor is not going to be hard to obtain as long as you fight Virago, or, you know, even if you purchase these things on the Grand Exchange. Because right now, I imagine because the Tectonic Energy pieces are quite common, they'll go down in price. Right now, they're hovering at about 1.1 million. So once, you know, these things come out and people get over the initial bump of excitement, I don't know, maybe if Virago becomes a commonplace thing, we'll see the price of these go down a bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends how much of this tectonic energy you actually get as a drop. Like, if you get, like, 40 or so, then it's, like, a full set of armor right there.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, if it's common, I don't see you maybe getting more than a couple at a time. So that's another question we'll have to save for the focus on this segment, just because this is kind of out of reach for the both of us right now. So
yeah, so we can only assume until proven otherwise at the moment.
Correct. All right.
Oh, and the one more thing. You have to, in order to actually enter the battle, you need to survive 50,000 damage, apparently.
Yes, yes. So as a result, you need a minimum of 5, because then that would, of course, split it out to 10,000 damage per person. Whereas if you have 50, it's only 1,000.
Can we handle 10,000 damage?
Yeah, if you get the highest level armors in the game, you can boost your life points beyond 10,000.
Yeah, but you need like full tank. Everybody needs full tank armor then, if that's the case.
Yeah. So, like I said, 10 people, between 10 and 20 people on this sounds ideal.
I guess the more the better, yeah.
Yeah, not just because of this, but also.
And again, there's five different. Again, there's 5 drops, so.
Yeah, and you know, if you did it with 5 people, chances are it's entirely possible that you could all get something. But I don't know. We'll see how this pans out. Because you remember when all the bosses come out, first they're hard, and then people. Yeah.
And then Walks comes in, Walk 16 comes in, and he solos them.
Yeah. And also, another interesting
thing. Can't wait to
see
that one.
Is, remember from the behind the scenes, they said that the stage is going to change each week. So, strategy that works this week might not be the strategy that works next week as well.
And that's pretty sweet to think about.
So once again, another reason why we really do want to take our time with this and allow a couple people to go fight this thing and gather the information that is needed before doing a focus on this. But that is something we will try and do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll jump in with the clan on a public fight, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, if they let you. I'm not entirely sure, but ages ago, when the God Wars was first out, I know there was some. They liked putting strict requirements on people who would come with them. Like, for example, you needed to have 96 summoning. You needed to have a certain type of armor, yada yada yada. Because now, especially with this, that is easy to enforce because just like the reworked God Wars dungeons, you can insert a passkey on this. So you can say you want a certain amount of people with a maximum combat level. I mean, a minimum combat level. And then you have to enter the password to get in. So that is easy to enforce on this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's Virago.
It is.
Not really much else to say on this, I don't think. So with that being said, let's move on to some of the tweaks and fixes for the week.
All right. Patchy notes.
Yes. First up, something strange is afoot in the forest between Lumbridge Swamp and Drainer, and people are flocking far and wide to see. Why not head over and take a look?
There is. Have you seen it yet?
No. What is it?
Okay, you ready for a spoiler?
Yes, please.
It's a portal.
Ooh, interesting.
It's a jet black portal, and there's a bunch of guys surrounding it looking at it. They're a little bit worried, and there's a portal enthusiast there talking about, I guess, how portals are made, and apparently she has come to the conclusion that a god has made this portal. So this portal is going to be bringing a god onto RuneScape.
Interesting. And, you know, it makes sense that this is where it is because in the behind the scenes for the Sixth Age...
for RuneScape 3,
They did say that the first world event will take place in the Lumbridge area, so there we go.
And that's the Battle of Lumbridge right there, so that's going to be exciting.
What was that thing they did last year that was a publicity stunt in a certain area that was a special thing that happened? Oh, remember the portals that were appearing for the RuneSpan?
Oh, yeah. Wait, RuneSpan?
Yeah, remember that, like, publicity stunt they did for the RuneSpan when portals were appearing everywhere and then mages would come seal them?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was a little publicity stunt a couple weeks last year before RuneSpan came out, and what would happen is portals would appear at various places in RuneScape, and mages from the Wizard's Tower would come and they would seal them off, and then you would talk to them and you would learn a bit about what was happening, but not enough to know that it was the RuneSpan. And we learned that was the major rework to the runecrafting skill. So, you know, I'm always a bit leery with things like this that appear beforehand just because of that. So I'm hoping that this worldwide event will be worth the wait and hype.
The only thing I remember was the Dark Surge that Dungeoneering followed up on, because what happened was point, like, everybody suddenly got an animation done to them, and then they were all facing a certain direction, and the NPCs and the Fremenic town
did
started
Did we ever find
weird.
Out what that was about?
Yeah, that was Bilrock dying.
Who?
Bilrock, the Majrat from Dungeoneering.
I see.
Apparently he's dead now. Something killed him, and that's what the explosion was. You learn it when you play Ritual of the Majrat.
Oh, okay.
Because as Nedra talks about it, again, spoiler alert.
So Return of the Majrat, you said?
The Ritual of the Majrat.
Oh, yes, right. Okay. All right. Also further on this, quests that took place before the world wakes are now classified as Fifth Age content. Then there's a short message before them explaining their place in RuneScape's timeline. So imagine, like, what we were just talking about here, Ritual of the Majrat and Wal'Guthic Sleeps would be one of these ones to have.
Fifth Age stuff. This.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it would be so good if we could replay these quests. I mean, wouldn't it be great to start off from the beginning of the Majrat line, work your way up to Wal'Guthic Sleeps, redo the World Wakes, all in.
I would love to be able to do the fight in Ritual of the Majrat with the stone active, because I was using Ceridome and Bruce to fight that one and I lost my boost really quickly. Stupid idea.
Oh, okay.
Because your stats get boosted like a huge amount.
And then you drank the bruise and they knocked him down.
Yeah, my familiar was doing more damage than I was because of that. It was kind of funny. It's like I was relying entirely on my Fire Titan attacking the Ice Demons because they weren't dying to my God Sword, and my familiar was just hitting like thousands on them. I'm like, how are you doing that?
All right, and there's something here that has been required for a long, long time. Huh? A long time.
Okay.
Finally, we get a UI option to toggle off menu options relating to familiars within the main game window.
What?
Yeah, finally. You know, in the main game window, how if you go to somewhere like Castle Wars or whatever where people bank with all their familiars, there's finally an option to remove all the extraneous menus from all the yaks and tortoises and racks there.
Yeah, so basically finally. Makes all the familiars invisible to you.
Yeah, to the right-click menu, yeah.
Oh.
Finally.
I'm going to sign up right now and turn that off. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, that thing's been needed ever since Summoning came out. It's a wonder it took so long for something like that to get suggested or implemented.
Somebody must have bugged somebody in Jagex's development team to finally go, fine, we'll do it already.
All right.
Except in the British accent. I don't know how he'd say it.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, in the patch notes this week, the flowers on the farming skill cape emote no longer clip through the player's face, which is good. I noticed this the other day. So that's good. That was fixed. A bunch of combat level requirements and level updates have been made. So, for example, the Elder Killen no longer states that there are level 300 creatures inside, which was before the combat update. People have had their weaknesses set accordingly for magic spells like Solarin the Twisted.
Like NPCs that have a sort of a unique weakness like Solarin was weak to mind spells?
Yeah, exactly. Those have been set proper in the game after the Evolution Combat update. So, Town Criers no longer refer to the non-existent advisor system. That thing was short-lived in the general perspective of RS. Anything else interesting on here that you'd like to share?
Not really. What's interesting is I'm seeing all these fixes and updates to the Dominion Tower, like Nomad got his attack back, and basically everything's become a whole lot harder now, the Dominion Tower, and it makes me think, well, I'm glad I did all that stuff and I got the full thing when the Desert Achievement Diary came out, so I guess I lucked out there. If you guys didn't get your achievements for that, then too bad. It's a lot harder now.
Yeah, that was one benefit of the Evolution of Combat update, made things a lot easier.
I'm waiting for him to update the trolls because it's just so darn easy to do it now.
Trolls?
What's it called? It's that one mini game you play it once a month and
Troll Invasion.
You fight Troll Invasion, thank you. The Troll Invasion. So easy to do now. I mean, go into hard mode and just start whacking stuff. Every single, I guess, tier one troll is one hit kill.
Wow.
Because of the evolution of combat. They haven't really done anything to fix that yet.
I should go do that. I used to do the skilling version of it, but I stopped. It's just there's so many things to do now, I don't even bother with half these daily things. So
yeah, totally. Just whack. You can take down Cliff so quickly now, and you don't even need to use prayers against him.
Hmm.
Just run up to him, whack him a few times. Whatever it's called, assault combo will pretty well do it for you. They call it a Quakebuster combo. You use Quake to lower the defense and then assault right afterwards, and that will kill Cliff almost guaranteed if you have a good weapon.
All right.
Other than that, here's one. The Ring of Wealth now only glows when a rare item is actually dropped. Oh my god.
Well, that's good.
About time. I mean, gets annoying. You're fighting Abyssal Demons at shows every single time that your ring of wealth is now glowing. Yep. Oh my gosh.
I turn that off. The menu option, that is. So
I don't even use the ring of wealth. I just go in there with my ring of visibility. It works better. Like, I don't think I've ever gotten a whip with a ring of wealth on. It's always
The whip is not a ring of wealth drop. It's a standard drop.
Oh.
Yep.
Lame.
All right. So with that, let's move on to the community roundup, and specifically a couple of community videos. Actually, quite a few of them this week. First really? One, Sir Mickle. Last year, this year's summer blockbuster, Eliza RuneScape style. So let's just have a listen and see what this is.
Oh dear.
Gillenor was once a place of continuing growth. Everyone tried to make their own way to grow in skills and become the best slayers, skillers, or money makers. But one day, it all changed. Gillenor became overpopulated and got low on resources. The kings of the empires of Gillenor searched for a solution, and they found one. Other planets were created, called Elysium.
Other planets? What?
Tools of skilling and survival were taken from Gillenor and placed on the new planet.
Resources were running low, so they built a new planet.
Yep.
Only the high level and wealthy players gained access to the planet. The lower class of people resided on an overpopulated Gillenor. People got sick and poor. Watchtowers were made because of the growing crimes committed on Gillenor. Everyone tried desperately to get food, while the players hunted Elysium planets and everything they needed. There were no cures for sickness and poverty, so people had to do everything to get a spot on the planet.
That guy was trying way too hard to be cool.
All right. You guys can watch the rest of that on your own time. There's also one featuring the locations of all 7 new lodestones. And then heading off into the fan art, someone painted an autumn spirit tree. Looks pretty nice, I think.
Oh, that is nice. Is that watercolor?
Looks like it. And someone also created a dragon plate armor with real-life blacksmithing skills.
Can't tell if that's metal or plastic. It looks plastic to me. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'd say it looks metallic from here.
It's shiny, but, I mean, if you're shaping metal, then you'd see maybe a couple of imperfections here and there, whereas plastic, it kind of bends a lot easier.
Yeah, but...
I think that's plastic.
But it's a pretty good recreation of it, if I must say so myself.
It does look really good, yeah.
And
I know he's going to be wearing during RuneFest.
Yeah, if he's going. Players Gallery 46, Gillenor Needs You, the results...
These
winner,
are cool.
Be wary of the subjugators. Deliver yourself from the grip of deities. Seek refuge with those who are godless. So
and you look at the poster, and it's just so simple. I mean, just look at that thing. It's beautiful, and it's simple. That's all you need.
Yeah, it's an advertisement for the godless faction.
Yep.
But notice on the guy's forehead, there's a Ceridoman star. Why is that?
Because you see how it's not just a Ceridoman star, but it's also sort of this clamping thing that's sort of containing his mind, right?
Oh, okay.
Like it's sort of like a prison for the mind. That's what it's...
I see.
It's saying, deliver yourself from the grip of deities. That's what they're doing, is that they're subjugating your mind, converting you to their will, basically. It's basically break free of their mind control is what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, gods don't chain you up by the legs and then whip you about or anything like that. No, they get you by religion and belief. They make you follow a lost cause using mind control abilities.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, we got bigger problems to deal with when the new world event appears. But nonetheless, there are two runners up. say no to Ogreside. So obviously a campaign to go against the ogre god of Bandos, which is understandable.
I thought this one was for Bandos.
No, it says say no to Ogreside.
Yeah, Ogreside's a bad thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Say no to Ogreside, say no to a bad thing means good thing for Bandos. Right?
I guess, but the way I took this was that it was somebody against Bandos by saying no to Ogreside because of the ogres and
or no
Bandos
to ogres,
wins.
And then you're saying to Ogreside, like, to Ogreside, let's do it. Kill all the ogres.
No, if...
And shoot them their heads with lightning, apparently.
If you say no to Ogreside, you're saying no to the ogres, no to the ogres murdering.
Wasn't Ogreside, like, from genocide, like the extinction and extermination of the ogres, or...
You're right. That would
This poster's confusing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you could take it either way, but yeah. I guess the key word there is Ogreside, meaning the death of the ogres. So I guess you are right in that.
Say no to death of ogres. So I guess it is for Bandos then.
Yeah. And there's also another one for the godless faction. We are free. We are pure. We are godless.
Yep, I have no idea what that symbol's supposed to represent in the middle.
It's the godless faction, the broken chain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because you notice the top one is a chain link, but the bottom link is broken. And
there should be, like, the show it's a chain, there should be, like, three of them, like, three links, and maybe the one in the middle is...
Yeah, that would be more evident, and, you know, if you went to go see the... Emissary of the Godless, this would be, of course, the symbol that he's wearing as well.
All right. Yep. Well, just my opinion, but it doesn't really look too much like a chain to me. But I guess now that I know that it is a chain, it does look a little bit like a chain. So, but then again, considering that the Godless are kind of sort of their own faction, they're kind of keeping it quiet, I guess, then this symbol kind of does help it a little bit. Because only those who are godless, only those who are sort of involved with them know exactly what the symbol means, whereas anyone else will look at it and think, what if?
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on from that, Jagex has published a new episode of their Above the Lore podcast dealing specifically with the dwarves. So if you wanted to know anything about the dwarves, you can head on over to their Podbean website and have a listen to it.
Here's a summary. They're short, they're bold, they swing hammers, they make metal, they're easy to kill.
Very good. Very good. So, also with this, they are running a contest called Help Design the Dwarf Quest. So you can design, as a player, either the leader or the monster from this quest. And
Quick opinion. Sorry, go ahead. Mm. I have a quick opinion, though. Do you think they're doing this to get the community more involved with quests, or do you think they're doing this because they just can't think of anything?
I think it's to get the community more involved, especially the way with RS3 and the entire Sixth Age is shaping up.
All right.
So you can send your entries in as either text form or an image. The leader is a Chaos Druid, so keep that in mind, so they're human. Also, the monster, horrific monster, live underground, and it'll drop an all new dragon throwing axe. So you can send your submissions in for either of these. You have until July 19th, and it must occupy no more than half an A4 page of text.
Wow.
And for those of you guys who are in the United States, A4 is almost letter size. All right. Are you going to enter that competition?
Maybe.
I think I'm going to try and design the leader. I have a couple of ideas.
I'm going to try the monster. I got a really good idea.
Yeah. My leader is going to come from a kind of a Star Trek kind of background based on some storylines there. So it should be interesting to see if I can pull something together for that.
And mine's going to be based off of a manga I really like.
Oh, okay. So a druid then. So you're going to...
No, I'm doing the monster.
Oh,
the monster,
right.
The bad guy, the abomination, okay. Creature thing, object.
Right. All right. Yes. So, moving on from that, the behind-the-scenes video for this week is The Quest, coming out next week, supposedly.
The Quest.
It's called Bringing Home the Bacon.
Purposely did not watch it so that nothing gets spoiled for me.
Okay, well, we'll just do a brief bit of coverage on this then. Right. Because, of course, it's a quest, and we like to cover those in detail when they come out. But effectively, what this quest is going to be doing is it's going to be bringing bacon to RuneScape.
Yep.
Pigs have been in RuneScape for so long, and it's been a wonder why we have no bacon. So you're going to get some summoning creatures from this quest. You're also going to get the ability to have bacon. And, of course, with that, you're also going to get new food items. So look forward to this quest and a little bit of an update on the cooking front. So hopefully that'll be coming out next week.
All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to this quest because it's a quest.
And finally, the piece of news that everyone's been wondering about, the RuneScape 3 launch date is Monday, July 22nd.
Ah.
And this will also, of course, feature with the centerpiece content, RuneScape 3, the Battle of Lumbridge. So this is that first world event dealing with specifically, we think, the gods now, especially since that portal was there. Any theories as to who's coming back?
The speculation is it's Zamorak's portal, but me, for some reason, I think it's Sliski.
Oh, okay. But no, he's back, because remember he killed Guthix.
Yeah, but then he vanished, and now he's he's using the portal to bring bad guys in or something from the Shadow Realm.
Oh, okay, all right.
I think it's from the Shadow Realm, because the portal itself is very dark and black and eerie-looking.
So it's definitely going to be one of the evildoers then.
Yep. I don't think it's going to be Zaros, because
he's very behind the scenes.
They call him. That's why they call him the Puppet Master.
Yeah,
and even
as
another
says
that.
So much.
You like him because he controls your mind.
Yeah, and controls.
He gives you your fate, and he makes you care of that.
Yes, yes, yes. All right.
He likes being controlled.
But also, as we mentioned, HTML5 game client, new audio engine, seasonal high scores. Those will be out. The Dawn of the Sixth Age and Battle of Lumbridge. So that'll be interesting to see. New interfaces, upgraded camera, community website, and divination will be unlocked a few weeks after the launch. So that is what we have looking forward to us. So that puts divination in the first half of August, and we will be ready for that.
Excitement. The team cannot contain their excitement, and neither can I. Happy, happy, yay.
Yeah. I mean, it's been so long coming, and it's really been an evolution of the game, starting last year with the evolution of combat, and this is just completing the project in my mind. So definitely looking forward to this.
Yuppers.
Anyway, shall we move on to the questions?
Alrighty.
All right. We got three audio questions this week. The first one is from RRMan100.
Hey guys, it's RRMan here. I thought I'd just chuck in a few questions or comments about Shane's trip to New Zealand. First off, Wellington, what did you think? That's my hometown. Next time you tell me you're here, because I'll come and meet you, mate. And I'm over 21, so that's all right. Secondly, Rotorua, you did mention the smell. How long did it take you to get used to it? I find a good half an hour, and then you sort of just, you waft it in and you kind of forget it's there. But yes, on first impression, you do want to leave that place as fast as possible. And lastly, how about a quick top five of your favourite destinations in New Zealand? Good to hear you came over, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I hope many more of the listeners can come check it out, because maybe I'm a bit biased. And to be honest, I'd like to come to Canada one day, because I would like to see that side of the world. And hell no, I'm not going to America. That. And yes, this is a RuneScape podcast, so let's do a RuneScape question. Did you guys hear about the massive server shutdown, lag, whatever it was, that happened to all the servers on the night that Virago came out? I watched this live stream from this guy called Skillscape RS, I think. Check him out on YouTube. But everything sort of just went black screen and failed, and all the people in this chat, the Skype call, went logged out and all that business, and they all lost bills of stuff, because they all took their best gear, of course, to fight this guy. But I wonder why Jagex didn't roll that back. It was crazy the amount of money that these people lost. But yeah, what are your thoughts? Peace out, guys.
All right, so let's start with the aftermath of Virago. Did you hear about any of this stuff that happened?
I have not.
All right.
And if this was really that intense, then I would imagine that somebody on from Jagex would have put it up on the latest news, apologizing and saying that it's been rolled back, but apparently not enough bad was done for that, I guess.
Yeah. The only thing that came from this was a post by one of the J-Mods, and I'll get to that in just a minute. But for anybody who wasn't aware on the full scope of this, what happened was that early in the morning on July 3rd and 4th, so middle of the night for the people in the UK, there was a server issue that prevented people from getting back into the world of where they were. So effectively what happened is that they lost connection and they were not able to get back in to reclaim their grave items. Now, normally, like you said, the graves are right outside Virago's area, so it's really easy to get back to if you die. But if you can't get back into the server, that's a bit of a problem, isn't it?
It is, very big.
So that's exactly what happened.
And the timer goes down when you're logged out, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Why?
I don't know. And
that's kind of silly, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it'd be nice, but I guess that would kind of be a little bit, I guess, maybe too much of a god mode type thing if you were able to just log out if you had dead items or whatever, something like that. But anyways, effectively what they're doing with this is they've launched a post for claims so that if you have lost items, they'll try and replace them. So you have to give them the world, the time, and what kind of items you lost. They said that many of them were affected as well when they were also attempting to kill Virago on their own accounts. And this was in no way related to the content itself or the imminent RS3 launch. And you know, I kind of have to believe that
so they think they may have had a blackout or something?
Yeah, they didn't say exactly what it was, but my theory on it is that the worlds were overloaded in that one area that caused some sort of issue on the servers that normally would have been able to weather without much of a problem. And then, of course, because so many people were there and it was such a high-stakes area, we get this kind of thing happening. So that's my theory on it. They said it wasn't caused by Virago or RS3, which we have to believe that. I know there are people out there who are just on a witch hunt for Jagex and will try and blame them for anything, but it's not nice to do that because they are people too, and sometimes as software developers, it is entirely possible that you just overlook one tiny detail and they need to be given a wide berth.
Oh, yeah.
So effectively what they're doing is they're running a reclamation thing and they're going through each post in here, looking at it on a case-by-case basis of what's happening. So the link is in here. If you know someone that's been affected, make sure they see this forum topic and post. And the thing that they mention very clearly is that if you were not there and you didn't lose specific items, don't say you lost specific items because you're taking up the time of the people looking into this and potentially the time to get other people's items back. So don't lie. And that will hamper your ability to get items back in the future should anything like this ever happen again.
This is the first time they've ever done something like this, isn't it? Actually physically give items back to players.
I know.
Because usually they say we cannot return items that you've lost, but since it was a server error, you'd think they would have rolled it back, but no, they're actually giving items back this time. That's a first.
Yeah, and you know, that just tells me that it wasn't as widespread as some kind of things were, because, like, I mean, back when Construction came out, we had a couple of rollbacks to fix little bugs like the sudden death bug and whatnot. So it's not as
widespread. And, of course, the Felder Massacre, if anyone can remember that.
So this is telling me that they're giving people the benefit of the doubt and they're wanting to ensure people that everything will be okay with this, which is understandable given the situation. So that's what happened with that. Now, onto the discussion of New Zealand. That was back in
February. You're on your own here.
Yeah, that was quite some time ago. So it's nice to hear you listening to the show again. And we didn't get to experience much of Wellington because it was just a one-day kind of trip. But it was very wet. That is the best way of describing it. Pretty much rained that entire day. So the only real thing that we did there was we got to see the government buildings. We were going to do something else, but we didn't get in time. But very wet, and mainly just stayed around the downtown core. The second thing regarding the smell in Rotorua, you know, it's a sulfur eggs kind of smell. And you're right, it kind of disappears after half an hour, but at first it's really overpowering, and certain areas it's more overpowering than others. And it didn't exactly make me sick to my stomach or anything, but it did have an effect when got to certain areas, when we actually went to the sulfur pools and whatnot to see the vents coming up out of the ground. So that's what I would have to say was actually worse than the actual town site itself. But aside from that, a list of the top five locations, going down the list, first and foremost would have to be the Lake Tekapo region, which is in southern Canterbury, South Island. I don't know if you've ever been down there, but should definitely go have a look if you haven't. Very nice, very calm, very small, good star viewing. The second would have to be Queenstown, which was the next stop after that. Very touristy, kind of a more general tourist kind of environment than the other place. And then after that would have to be the northwest tip of the South Island, specifically Nelson, Motueka, and Kai Teritori Beach. So those would be the top three. I'd say everything else pretty much tied for general appeal. And for those of you guys wondering, it was quite expansive, and if anybody wants more information on that, you can go and listen to, I believe it was episode 400. We did a brief rundown at the end of the show of exactly what we did. And that's that. All right, Alex, shall we listen to the next
one? I'm awake. No, I've always been awake. I haven't put those off. I'm still here.
All right, next question's from Muramska. Here we go.
Okay.
Hello, Shane and Temple Trekkie. Muramska here. America! It seems like the world puts too much emphasis in American holidays. I don't know why they're mentioning it in the news here, but it seems to get a lot of coverage.
America,
anyways,
what?
I'm calling dibs on the question I asked in 358 about Piggy. Anyway, I don't feel like playing RuneScape lately. Can you recommend any other games? Mainly probably PC. It seems like I don't like to play much modern games. The last modern game I bought and played probably was Dragon Age 2. I don't know if based off that you can give me any recommendations. Anyway, I'll talk to you next time. Muramska out.
All right. Yeah, we do have the same issue here with the American influence in the TV and whatnot, primarily because that's where all the TV shows come from. Well, at least most of them. And also about a third of the TV channels we have are American affiliates broadcasted up north here. So, yeah, we are exposed to that quite a bit, and I'm inclined to agree with you on that.
I don't even know what the question was.
Well, it's just, what do you think of the general American influence on our TV here and whatnot?
Well, I think you said pretty well said it all. Most of their programs actually come from America.
Yep.
And usually they are the good ones.
Well, most of them. I mean, but there's still so much crap on TV. It's It's really hard to find anything decent these days.
That's why I always go to the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. Do you have any game recommendations that aren't RuneScape that you like that you could play through?
Any game you can buy on Steam for $10, no more, no less.
Okay.
That's my recommendation.
And that would most likely be a quick game and not necessarily some huge, long-winded
yep.
type
just
thing.
Smaller, just smaller indie games. Some of them will probably okay. last you maybe a couple of hours or so. Some of them actually can probably bring you through entire days.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots
of
good...
But check it out. I mean, go on the Steam, search for games that cost $10, and then just go through them. Maybe you'll find something you like.
Yeah, there's lots of good stuff on Steam. Like, for example... I used this as a pick many moons ago, but Universe Sandbox lets you simulate stuff in the universe. It's only $5, and you can do lots of amazing things with it. That's one as an example. So there are lots of little gems on Steam that are just hard to find. So that's one thing. I don't know if you've played games like Assassin's Creed or whatnot, but I know those are games that a lot of people like to play and have a good amount of playtime and aren't... stereotypical, you know, Call of Duty type games that we're plagued with every year. So there's those. Another thing I, of course, also have to mention is StarCraft II. If you're a fan of RTS games, you can get started and then just play it at whatever level you like. There's really no pressure to do well because most of the time you'll get put somewhere where you actually do do not too bad once you play it enough. So that's an option if you're into RTSs and strategic thinking. What else is there? Oh, of course, Star Trek Online. That is also something I do need to mention. That is a free game. So if you're interested in another MMO type thing, or if you're interested in Star Trek, you should definitely have a look at that.
Doesn't work on Mac though.
No, there is no Mac version.
Yeah.
So you take
that into
account.
You may need the Windows. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a pity I don't have Windows.
I got both, so I'm good.
Oh, you.
All right. Thank you, Maramska. Next audio question is from 101Duck1.
Hello to our honorable hosts. This is 101Duck1, back with another question. As I've progressed with my character recently in RuneScape, I've come to crave new weaponry to fully optimize my player's combat capabilities.
Do not swallow.
In my search for new power, I've decided to embark on a journey for dual chaotic rapiers. Being a higher level dungeoneer, I'd like to ask Trekkie what his personal favorite way is to train dungeoneering. Do you prefer solo or teams? Do you rush everything, or are you fairly relaxed? Please explain your personal philosophies on the subject matter. On another wavelength, what do you plan on doing with your Crown of Seasons, Trekkie? Have you sold it already, or will you wait it out? Do you guys think that Jagex's attempt to reintroduce a tradable rare will succeed like the party hats of old, or fail like the fish mask? As always, I thank you for the show, and wish you both a fantastic week.
Aw. Kudos for being able to say our name without cracking up, by the way.
Hmm?
Kudos for being able to say your name without cracking up, by the way.
Oh, okay. But in regards to his crown, he's going to give it to me. That's what he's going to do. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. So, Dungeoneering.
Glad you're in on it. Yeah. Trekkie, unfortunately, is not here, so apparently the task falls to me. I'm not as good as a dungeoneer as Trekkie is, only level 98. But if you want my opinion, it probably won't be as good as his, but my opinion is go in groups.
Just wait. You said only level 98. That's
yeah,
key.
Just, yeah, that's it. Considering okay. Trekkie is, what, level 120 now?
103.
103? Close enough. Considering he's a much higher level than I am right now, my opinion may not be as, I guess, detailed as his, but I'll see what I can do. But anyways, my recommendation is to try to find yourself a good group, like five people or more, or five people, if at all. And it depends on how you rush it. There's two. I found there's kind of two kinds of rushing. There's the rush where everybody is strict and yelling at people, come on, go faster, or else I'm going to kick you, that kind of thing. It's not really that enjoyable, but they do get done a lot quicker than the just a standard rush where you basically find a door. If you have a door, put your gatestone there and do whatever it takes to open that door. Where you kind of almost don't care about yourself. You don't have that much conversation going on between people unless there's a guardian door to which you just call it out and everybody teleports over. It's a lot more relaxed, and if anything, it can be a little bit more fun, but it does take a little bit longer than the super rushes, as I call them. But I would recommend, if you really want to get the level quickly, then the super rushes are the way to go. I mean, they do keep you on your toes, and they are actually kind of fun to play if you do it for a while.
All right. Anything else on that? Or any other dungeoneering tips in general?
And if you have to solo, then I don't know. You really don't have to solo. I mean, you go into a good dungeoneering world, you can probably find a team. And if not, then see if you can find a clan or something. Just do a little bit of research, find a clan. And worst case scenario, actually, no. You know what? Don't join those leeching guys, because those guys are awful.
They could be scams. But
could be, yeah, right.
I really don't have that much dungeoneering experience, but I will second the group method. That is the best way of doing it, the fastest XP.
It's also less to worry about because you got five people doing the floor instead of one person.
Yeah, so there's that. Also, if you can get five people that you know well to do it, it can be fun. Just get people on Skype and whatnot and do it all together. That's another good way of doing it.
And also, if you do find groups, see if you can friend as many of those people as you can if it's a really good group, because then you'll get used to each other and you'll be able to sort of call each other in for another dungeon, and that'll help you save time finding a party.
I would definitely agree with that as well. Another thing that, of course, aside with the groups and the rushing mechanics, is that once you're of higher level dungeoneering, say 75 or 80 beyond, you really should just rush the first 35 to 40 floors or so, and then use the floors above 40 in order to get the good XP. So
you don't even
words,
have to do 40, just 35 is usually good.
Right to the end of Abandoned 2. So rush the first 35 floors on small complexity ones just on your own to unlock them, because, you know, each time you reset through a floor, you gain more XP if you've not already done it. So then once you've done them all, you reset again and repeat. So
actually, also in regards to rushing the floors 1 through 35, if you can, try to get that done in the group as well. Like, advertise that you're going to be doing a rush from floor 1 to 35, and if you can get like a couple of people in, then it kind of brings your time down almost by half. If you have a good team of five people who know what they're doing, you can bring down dungeons to like a minute.
All right.
It only takes a minute to get through each of them, so half an hour, done.
All right, there we go. You know, we did talk about dungeoneering quite a bit in the past. So we actually did a focus on this, if I remember correctly, where we talked quite a bit about this in general. I'm just trying to remember what focus number it was, just pulling that up here, but we did have actually a dungeoneering expert on the show. Let's see. What focus was this?
Wasn't me. That's
RSBNB Update Focus Dungeoneering, episode 383.
That wasn't too long ago. It was like almost a year.
Yeah, it's good. So, episode 383 has another focus on it that you can listen to. All right. Thank you, 101 Duck 1, for that question.
I'm okay.
Read the first one from Veteran.
Veteran, okay.
Hello, hosts. I was doing Slayer as usual, and I recently completed Desert Treasure. I was using the spell when I thought of an update that Jagex could implement within the game. What if the more you use a spell, the more powerful it gets, so that the spells have a separate level themselves? What are your thoughts?
I actually agree with this idea, and it's partially my theory of divination and skill number two that's coming out this year. As I mentioned last week, in divination, you gather the knowledge and whatnot sent down to you from the gods using different methods as you level up. And the second skill is applying this into existing things in the game. So that would be leveling up your woodcutting axe, leveling up your staff, leveling up your fire burst spell, that sort of thing. So it's a good idea, and I think that's definitely coming. Because last year in one of the Q&As, they did mention that something like this was on their radar to do. So I'm 100% behind this idea. I think it's a good idea.
I like it too, but the only concern I have is what's the limit going to be on how much you can level these things? Like, would you be able to level it so much that a guy using an ordinary fire wave, for instance, and then the guy using, I guess, the highest level fire possible, what would be the difference between that? Could the fire wave become like a one-hit kill weapon?
No.
Or would it only go up to maybe about twice as powerful?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Go for twice as powerful.
Because that's, I guess, a bit fair, but still, I mean, you're dealing twice as much damage as the other guy is just because you use Fire Wave a lot.
Yeah, and you know, that's why you wouldn't level up spells. I didn't think leveling up spells would be a good idea. I think keeping it towards more universal things like staves, wands, hatchets would be better.
So you know what I think would probably be a better idea is if the levels sort of branched off amongst different weapons. If you train more in one weapon, you kind of lose levels in another weapon. So, for instance, if you cast Fire Wave a lot, then your other ones, your Earth Wave and Water Wave, they become a bit weaker.
See, that's a good idea for specializing, but there's so many little things in the game that require you to use a certain type of spell. So that's why I can't see Jagex really doing that with the spells, is because it's almost too granular. Mm. And when you go down to a level of being too granular, you end up with what looks like a very specialized character. And let's face it, there's already enough grinding as it is in RuneScape. We don't need to be adding more to it.
Yeah, I suppose.
So. But overall, I think it's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. I like that idea, too.
And speaking of which, Desert Treasure could also use some work, because that's one of the oldest quests that deals with Zaros.
It is, yeah.
All right.
The pyramid next needs one... a good workover.
Sorry, who?
The pyramid needs a workover.
Oh, okay. But they did update. Was that in the desert update with the task set? I don't know. I didn't go down there to do that one.
I don't know, actually. Maybe they did.
I think it would be, because they redid the entire desert area.
Yeah, they didn't update any of the pyramids, though. The agility pyramid is the same, and the... I don't know. Maybe exterior-wise, they updated it a bit, but I don't think anything in the interior has been changed.
Yeah, I'm willing to accept that. All right, next one is from Lord Fast Wesley. Dear hosts, I am back again with only one question this time. Considering all the problems, glitches, and weird goings-on with RuneScape 3 beta, do you really think it's ready for official release? Why or why not? Thank you, good sirs. And another fine day in escape to you all. Sincerely, your friendly neighborhood, Fast Wesley. Toodles.
Well, how often is RuneScape 3 beta being updated?
There was an update on July 3rd. It brought a bunch of fixes pertaining to loading items and whatnot. So it's being updated on a weekly basis. I am getting perfect frame rates on my Mac, which is a laptop-based video card, which is never going to be as powerful as a desktop GPU. So I am very happy with that. The only issues that I mainly have with RS3 are water and shadows. I can run water, but water and shadows combined really is painful to run still. And keeping in mind, this is on the Mac, so it could be better on Windows. But overall, I have had good experiences with RS3 so far.
Works for me as well, and I use a sort of an older MacBook Pro.
Oh, okay. What kind of frame rates are you getting?
Sort of the norm, about 25, 30 frames per second.
Yeah, and you know, that's respectable. I imagine you got the draw distance on low.
Fairly low, yeah.
Yeah.
I tried just to see how it would work. I tried maxing everything out, and I got about 10 frames per second. It was still pretty good.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's improved greatly since it came out, and, you know, moving is an issue, and loading things is still an issue, but it's not nearly as bad as it's been. I am of the opinion that it will be ready by the 22nd. For two reasons. One, the pace of improvements we've seen since the beta first came out back in April. And secondly, the developers are always a couple of weeks ahead, it seems, into what the players are going to be getting, and they know where they're at with regard to the roadmap of optimizing and whatnot. So I'm fairly certain that we'll see the majority of all the bugs squished by the time that this thing does come out. And remember, when dealing with things released on a rapid release cycle, such as RuneScape, bugs are to be expected. RuneScape has been on a rapid release cycle ever since the game came out. And back in the first part of the decade, especially, rapid release cycles for software were incredibly rare. Now, that's become the norm everywhere. And the best part about that is that you don't need to wait forever for a bug to be fixed. So these bugs are going to get fixed once they come out. And let's also remember that taking RS3 from a beta up to a public release is going to be another good realm of testing, because there are people who just will not play beta software. There are people that will use beta software but not report bugs, and those people are not helping. So until those people get in the mainstream of RS3, it's not likely that those bugs will be seen. So yes, bugs are inevitable, but it's not nearly as bad as it once was.
And once it becomes the alpha, then the bugs will just be repaired all the faster, because you got a whole ton more people finding them and reporting them.
Yep, exactly. And you know, that's the thing. More eyes on the code, more bug fixing. More users, more bugs found. It's a cycle. And that's the way it works. So we do need to take it to this next level. Now, granted, there are more... there are pieces of software out there and pieces of code that do need more testing. Evolution of Combat was one of those. And that was, in my view, not executed properly. It was a poorly seeded beta. I mean, people had the beta that weren't using it. And as evident, once this got to the main public, we saw changes being made as soon ago as last month. So, I mean, more people really needed to be involved in the Evolution of Combat testing and providing their feedback. And, you know, it doesn't change RS. The HTML5 update doesn't change RS in that way. This is equivalent to the update of high-detail Java all those years ago, adding textures and whatnot. Whereas the interface system is also, of course, having its own beta test at the same time. So I'm confident it'll be fine.
Totally.
All right. You want to read the next one?
All right.
Hello, Knack here with a question that comes in two parts, mainly for Shane. Alex, you can drown in a fire under an avalanche in space. Part 1. If Starfleet existed, would you join? Part 2. In the event that you said yes to the above question, you have to decide between this show and Starfleet. Which do you choose? Awkward pause.
Yeah, you know, it's a question that that I think's been asked before, but I'll answer it again. And
which Starfleet, Next Generation or original?
Well, no, it's one organization, just different time periods. The exploration aspect is nice, but I mean, being the 24th century and all, I'm sure there are other things that I could find to amuse myself with here on the planet. So I would have to wait and see, but I would definitely consider it. But in regard to the above question, having to decide between the show and this, it would be a fairly easy choice to go with the Starfleet choice or something else, mainly because the show wouldn't exist in that time frame. And I mean, that would be a big opportunity compared to doing this show, as you can imagine.
And he could probably do the show, and he could do the show in Starfleet while he's exploring. Have some more stuff to talk about.
Potentially, but maybe not, given how far out I'd be, depending on things. Because it depends on subspace communications, can take sometimes a number of days or hours for things to be distributed.
So I guess
it would all depend. Thank you, Dak.
Good fun.
All right, this last question is from Flash. Dear hosts, another question on the upcoming divination skill for you guys. I have heard that they might use old school training methods for this skill. Would you prefer divination to be a quick skill or a slower paced one? I would actually want it to be a slow skill because I feel that the game is becoming too easy these days with updates like Runespan and Bonfires, allowing for faster and easier training for previously difficult to train skills. Level 99s used to mean a lot more because it's harder to train the skills back then, but now they're very common and easy to get. In my opinion, it would be great to see another skill where getting the level 99 means something, not one that you can get in a week or two. Flash. I completely agree with you.
Oh, yeah.
Skills have become too fast to train. Back in RuneScape Classic, it was designed that it would take you forever to get to 99 in a skill. Hence why Runite Ore was level 85, and Rune Plate Bodies were level 99. They were designed to be endgame content, and of course, that doesn't work now. So I would love a slow skill. Slower than runecrafting was initially, or as slow as that would be good.
That is pretty slow.
Yeah.
How about prayer in the times of RuneScape Classic?
Where you only had the basic bones? Yeah, that would be slow as well, but there would have to be other training methods as well that would
There's a time where big bones were the best experience you could get. Yep. You had to kill giants and you had to bury big bones to get level 99. In fact, getting level 40 to get into the Prayer Guild, that was an achievement back then.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't mind seeing something like this just because it's been so long since we've had a new skill come out. And like you said, everything's just so fast nowadays. Definitely agree with you.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be a slow skill, but at the same time, it cannot be one of those repetitive skills like fishing, where you have to keep on clicking the same spot over and over again.
Well, they did say it's going to be kind of like a gathering finishing type thing with the second skill that comes out. So
something more like dungeoneering then.
No, it's going to be like a fishing or a woodcutting or a mining type skill. It's just going to be different methods of doing it.
Better be.
Yeah. So, definitely going to be interesting to see, but I think we're all in the camp here of wanting something slower, given how fast summoning was. Dungeoneering really wasn't even slow once people figured out how to do it. Construction wasn't slow. That was done in a couple days. Farming was a good rate, I think.
Well, construction was more of a money sink than anything. I mean, if you had lots of money, then you could get it fast, but if you didn't, then you actually had to take your time a bit.
Yeah.
I like construction for that. It was nice.
Yeah, and you know, farming was nice too in that everybody started out the same thing and had time to work up to the seeds that they wanted to get. And once you did that, it took a good week of working to get level 55 farming. So if it takes a week to get level 55, that would be good, I think. So.
Yeah.
All right.
And there should also be like something for every level as well, like something new for every level that you can
do, or maybe a couple levels thrown in. That would be good.
Yeah. Because when you grow a level, you want to make it count, because I really don't like it when I say grow like thieving level 92, for instance. I grew it out like, 92 thieving, and then I look on there and it says, keep training your skill to advance and make it better. I'm like, oh. Because you get that level, but there's really nothing to show for it.
Then, exactly.
That's why I like construction, because every level you get, something new is available. And you just like, oh, what's next? What's next? Oh, look at that stuff. I want to build that right now. And you actually get out of your way of your menial training to go get the equipment to get that new piece of furniture, throw it into your house like a trophy, and then you keep on going. That's why construction's my favorite skill, because you have something to show for it with every level.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I didn't know that.
So hopefully divination is something like that. When you get like a new, when you get every level, you get something new that you can show for it, or maybe something gets upgraded.
Yeah, that would be good.
Here's hoping.
All right. Thank you for the questions, everyone. Just a reminder out there that if you want to submit a question, you can do so. Just head on over to the RSBNB forums. Topics are posted every Monday, and then there you can leave your text question in the global announcement for the weekly questions. Or if you want to submit an audio question, you can do that too. Like the three people did here this week, just send them to questions@rsbnb.com. Make sure you include the file attachment, of course, and your name. Otherwise, I'll just reference you by your first name on the email.
And subtitles if you can. It would be very nice if you could add those too.
If it's a long question, yes.
Or if it's hard to understand.
You can also phone them in to the Google Voice number, which is 571-572-2632.
Oh, you use numbers for that thing.
Yeah, we do. We do have a Google Voice number where you can phone in and just leave a voicemail message. If you're in the U.S., it's by far the easiest way to leave us a question. It just costs a bit if you're not in the U.S.
Ah.
Yep.
That's all how right. It works.
Moving on to tech news.
Yay.
So this week, Douglas Engelbart. I don't know if many people out there will know who he is. Do you?
I do not. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I have no idea who this guy is, nor do I know what he's done to contribute to society.
Well, he passed away this week, and he was the creator of the computer mouse.
Oh.
Yes. So the mouse that everyone uses, the general idea of a pointer, he created this in 1968, and he was 88 years old this week when he died. It was December 19th, 1968, when he demonstrated the mouse. Completely new concept towards computing. And it really shows how deeply rooted our methods of interaction with the computer are when something that was designed in 1968 is still widely used. So,
can you imagine having to operate Windows 7 using nothing but the keyboard?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, try that right now, viewers at home. Pull out your mouse and see if you can operate your computer using only your keyboard.
I could, but other people couldn't. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, the mouse is very key in computing. So, many people are not aware of what went into this, but, you know, the mouse, paved the way for many things, and Douglas Engelbart also showed off some things that really were far out compared to where technology was at the time, including what's called WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get editing. So basically the editing that we all do in our current day word processors with embedded hyperlinks. He also combined text with graphics. Speculated the future of ARPANET, which was the precursor to the internet. He also believed would allow him to demonstrate NLS anywhere in the country. He also, he was also already video conferencing with his colleagues behind the scene in Menlo Park, 30 miles away. So he was a real technology pioneer, and I thought that it would be good to share this news because not many people think about the mouse and how it was designed and where it came from. So now you know where the mouse came from.
Douglas Engelbart.
Yep.
He will be missed. I never knew him, but he will be missed somehow.
Yeah, and you know, it, of course, starting with the mouse, it, of course, progressed on to other things like touch screens now for phones and, you know, maybe even later on. Yep.
Styluses.
Eye motion tracking, head tracking, that sort of thing. So basically starting with the idea of a mouse and just advancing.
Now I can track with forward. Your eyes.
Yep. That could be where we're headed, but it'll be interesting to see.
That would be dizzying. I mean, using your eyes to move the cursor around the screen.
Yeah, it would definitely give you a workup for your eyes, that's for sure.
Probably would be good for them, though.
All right. Second piece of news. Snowden and Assange were targeted by a mysterious hacker calling himself the Jester. So for anyone who's been living under a rock, Edward Snowden and Julian Assange are two people that people like to call freedom fighters, but some people have other opinions, and some people really, really don't like these people, as evident by what this person calling themselves the Jester did. I'll just read from the article here. A shadowy self-described patriot hacktivist has launched a series of cyber attacks against Ecuador and says he plans a similar onslaught against any country considering granting asylum to former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden. The hacker calls himself the Jester and in the past has identified himself as a former soldier, has also taken aim at Julian Assange. So, effectively, this hacker doesn't like what these people are doing and feels compelled to try and hurt the path of people who are offering refuge towards people like Snowden and Assange. So, on Monday this past week, Jester launched a denial-of-service attack against Ecuador, which is one of the countries that was considering asylum for Edward Snowden. Targeted primary email servers for the second biggest Ecuadorian stock exchange and the country's official tourism website. The websites went down, the mail servers went down, but after this was happened, they were not able to provide, you know, definite proof that it happened, but he did claim responsibility for it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's hard to say who this person is, but the way he's acting makes it seem as though he's very high profile. Apparently, the Jester, who has one of his computers on display at the International Spy Museum, is famous for launching cyber attacks in the past, specifically against WikiLeaks and Al-Qaeda-linked websites. So it is a hacker that feels that he has a certain right to do this in order to protect the country.
Not even a right. He thinks it's an act of justice that he's doing this.
Yeah, and you know, that seems to be what people do these days, given the internet and whatnot. Yeah. And if you are interested in following what he's up to, you can actually follow him on Twitter if you do that. So, for example, on July 1st, he apparently hacked a fire alarm system at the Ecuadorian embassy in London in an attempt to try and get Julian Assange to go outside of the embassy. He's also got maps of the embassy there, specifically what kind of Wi-Fi points are active. So let's just say he's done his research and he's not playing around.
No kidding.
But have a read, and it really shows a different perspective on cyber hacking.
Yeah. So one thing worse than a hacker is a hacker who knows what he's doing.
Yep. That's right. All right. Final piece of tech news for this week. Norton Labs has published findings that Facebook's Android app has sent millions of people's phone numbers to its servers upon launch without users even logging into the application.
Jester. I'm kidding.
Yeah, so I mean, this is quite substantial for Facebook doing this, just because, you know, Facebook applications are probably one of the widely most installed applications on mobile phones in the world. So it's definitely something to be concerned about. So if you are on Android and you use Facebook, just be aware of this, that your entire contact information could have been sent without your consent. Yep, it doesn't even require you to log in, so there's no way of knowing what it's doing. Which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Apparently the application also
that is legally considered
has
hacking, for gosh sakes.
Apparently, the application can send audio, record audio at any time without notifying you as well. So that's just how copious the rights are on this thing.
Oh, boy. What's Facebook going to do with your audio and your phone number, though?
I don't know, but apparently it can also copy images as well. So, yeah.
Okay, Facebook's got a backdoor.
Yeah, so just keep this in use if you're using Facebook on Android. Hard to say if this could make its way to other platforms, but I know for a fact that iOS will ask you before it can access your contact photos or microphone. So that is one piece of good news for iOS users. But
yay.
You've been warned.
Don't use Facebook on Android.
Yep.
Please.
All right.
Or you know what? Go ahead. You probably deserve it anyways.
All right. So that's it for tech news. Anything else to add?
Not really, no.
All right. So moving on from that, we got the July skill of the month, which is Dungeoneering. We're already off to an interesting start here. First place, Zahara Knight, 9.4 million experience gained. Second place, JAM Andy, 52, with 8.1 million experience gained. And third place is FishFish, with 3.2 million experience gained.
Yeah, so we got a race going in a week.
Yep, less than a week, 4 days.
Yep. Holy cow. It's not fair, you're already at level 120.
Yeah, it is pretty insane, if I must say so myself. But the month is only 5 days over, so it's going to be interesting to see what the race develops into, whether it remains a two-person contest or a couple others jump in as well, because FishFish is close, second closest, and then looks like we might have a race for third going on as well.
Hmm. I like that. It's like not always X-Blades, for first. When somebody Sorensen. Has a commanding lead, it's not always about first. It's whoever gets second and third that becomes a lot more interesting.
Yeah, and you know, that's exactly what happened in last month's skill of the month, July. It was mining, and Adiv completely took that one away. He gained about 13 million XP. He essentially got level 99 again in this skill. Second place, it was a race for between Flash and Parnassius. Flash got 2.9 million experience, while Parnassius gathered 2.4. So congratulations to everybody in that skill of the month as well.
Yes, congratulations indeed.
Yep.
I think.
Yes.
No lifers.
All right. With that, moving on to achievements of the week. We got a couple of them this week. So first up is Eon, with 99 Hunter on the 2nd of July and 99 Ranged on the 30th of June. So congratulations to you.
Well done.
And next?
Hunter and Ranged. It's very appropriate. Next up is Grandpa Guppy, 99 Ranged, June 28, 2013. I am totally not jealous.
Congratulations.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Congratulations. Yes, that's right. I should say that.
And finally, we got Power with 99 Fletching on the 28th as well. So good job to everyone this week, and nice 99s.
Yes, indeed. How do you get 99 Fletching? I've got no patience for that skill.
Well, it's a bank standing skill. You know, you gather your logs and your bowstrings, and then you just cut them and then string them.
I have logs. I have enough logs to get me to level 99, but I, for the life of me, can't will myself to do it.
It's one of those ones that works better when you watch something on the TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually have to watch TV. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I don't watch TV much at all. What's TV?
All right. And since it's the beginning of the month, we also got the July Informer Roundup. So if you're if you've missed any of the articles that were published in June, or you haven't read them all, I invite you to have a look at what we talked about this month.
Read mine; it doesn't suck as much.
Yeah, what is it? I'm kidding. What's coming next? What was that about?
What's coming next? I was basically just sort of analyzing the future updates.
Okay.
What I did was I just basically took what they did was that behind the scenes, instead of giving us a list of stuff that they were going to be doing throughout the month. They gave us a couple of things they're going to do for the month, and then they gave us this big giant list of things that are to come in the future that they're not working in any specific order, but they are hoping to bring out sooner or later. And so I just basically went through each one of them and offered my opinion on each of them, including construction update, which I'm looking very forward to. And if you read my article, you'll be able to tell.
Then we also had the other articles from our other writers. So Lord Rickles, cosmetic items, Duke Juker balance in video games. Jason compared RuneScape with other games. We also had a look at the changes to Evolution of Combat, the most recent batch, and Zant's article. And I wrote about writer's block, creative block, whatever kind of block you might have.
You wrote about blocks.
Yep.
Just wrote about Minecraft. Minecraft's full of blocks and Lego.
Very funny, very funny. That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, have a read through the roundup and look forward to what's coming out this month.
Exciting.
So, you got a pick for us. What is that?
I got a pick. All right. Ages ago, there's a bit of history of this. Ages ago, when Super Smash Bros. Brawl was coming out for the Wii, SmashBros.com became a... Nintendo put up Super Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Let me try it again. There's a bit of history behind this one. Ages ago, when Super Smash Bros. Brawl was coming out for the Wii, Nintendo put up a site called SmashBros.com, in which it offered up updates, including characters and levels that were going to be appearing in the game, so that you could sort of gradually build up hype for people who are excited about the game. And now, having gone through E3 and announcing the game, they've put up the website again. And though they haven't really updated it since they actually put the website up, they are promising to put up some very interesting promising some very interesting characters in this next installment of Smash Brothers. So anyone who's a big fan of Super Smash Brothers, I know I am, you may want to check out this website once a day just to see what's going on. Don't want to spoil anything yet, but the first two characters are very interesting.
Yeah, apparently the Wii Fit Trainer is coming.
Yep.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting that Nintendo is incorporating their Wii-type different games into the traditional Nintendo canon, I guess you could call it, of all the other characters, like the Wii characters, like that.
Yeah. Interesting how she plays out, though. She's sort of a cross-mix between Sheik and the fighting Polygon, as it looks like. She's like entirely melee-based, but she's very tactical.
Interesting. Oh, and I see Pikachu still exists.
Yeah. You notice Pikachu, as he evolves from the games, he seems to get more limb. It's like his arms get bigger and everything, and he's got a little bit more, I guess, muscle to him, as opposed to in Super Smash Bros. For the 64, he's just this big blob.
Yeah, well, graphics were pretty bad back then.
Yeah, they were, but still, you're seeing his physique change, for gosh sakes.
And Mario's nose has got more pronounced.
Yep.
All right, very good. So, what have you been up to this week on RuneScape?
Not very much. I haven't even been doing ports anymore because I've got about 80,000 stainless steel now.
Wow.
And I've got enough resources for all the armors. I've got enough ancient bones for 100 scrimshaws, which I cannot craft. Well, okay, 50 scrimshaws, which I cannot craft yet because I don't have the fletching level I want. And that's what I'm working on right now, kind of, is when I get some time, like when I'm doing dishes or whatever, I just go on the RuneScape and I do some fletching. Or maybe I'll just hunt a couple penguins and do the troll invasion and get some extra experience from there.
That makes
sense. And all my Squeal of Fortune lamps goes towards fletching. Just want to get level 90. Mm. Simple.
Yeah, that's a good goal.
Other than that, every so often, maintain my kingdom and miscellanea, maybe check out the updates, see what's going on. Other than that, I haven't really been doing very much in RuneScape.
All right. Well.
How about you?
Okay, go ahead.
How about you?
Okay. This week, I did a couple more Slayer tasks and was reminded of how crappy the level 3 clue rewards can be, because, you know, they, I don't know if it's just me or if the value of them have gone down, but it seems as though level 3 clue rewards aren't nearly as good as they used to be.
Well, well, truth be told, it has been a while since I've done them, but I never really done the clue scrolls for the rewards. I've just done them for the fun.
Okay. Like, I mean, last night I got this clue that was worth no more than 15k GP. I mean, madness. The best thing that came from it was a court summons.
That is actually to be expected from level 3 clue scrolls. Like, if you can, sometimes I get clue scrolls that where you only get runes and maybe a rune dagger, and that's it. And that's not even 5k.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
And there, you know, there are worse out there.
I'm guessing they've moved most of the good items towards the level 4 clue scrolls. That's my guess, at least.
Well, level 4 clue scrolls offer a few more advanced rewards, like dragon stuff and potions and whatnot.
Yeah, lots, and they actually send you into the wilderness.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, level 3 clue scrolls do the 2 every so often, but just not as
frequently. Yeah, not as much as they used to, though.
Hardly ever, though.
Yeah.
What they should do, though, is that depending on the difficulty of the clue, like if you have to do a whole bunch of Spy Master and a couple of Wilderness clues, you should get a bit of reward, I think. But it's always randomized, no matter what kind of clues you get. Like, I can go to the same spot 3 times and get a really good reward, and then next clue I get, I have to go into the Wilderness 3 times, and I get a Runite Dagger.
Yeah, it's pretty bad with that regard. But anyways, aside from that, I've just been doing some Slayer tasks, trying to get 99 Constitution before RS3 comes out. That's just a little goal I set for myself, so we'll see if that happens. I'm about 350k away from that, so it should be possible.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I'm going to head back to the Glacors and do that rather than Slayer. It's just a lot more constant, and don't need to worry about changing my combat type, and I can actually use magic there, which is my preferred combat type. So,
how do you fight the Glacors now in the evolution of combat? You just use magic still?
Yeah, fire. It's actually a lot easier than it used to be. They're one of the NPCs that ended up being easier rather than harder.
Huh. I should try them sometime.
Yeah, I mean, one of the boots is still worth a decent amount. The rest really aren't that good. But still, if you do manage to get the, I think they're the Steadfast boots, it's a good amount of money that you can bring in.
I just want to collect the shards of Armandil.
Ah, yeah.
Get 100 of them Steadfast for us to make boots. A staff.
Steadfast boots go for 20 million. Which is, of course, nice. That's, it's always nice to top up on something like that. And, you know, you can tweak your magic spells now to give you pure defense XP, if that's what you're going for. So I'm fine
Not
with
really.
That.
The only skill I have to train right now is ranged. My only combat skill. Ranged and summoning, which are both 95.
Oh, okay.
Everything else, magic, attack, strength, defense, constitution, 99.
Well, I think I am done for this episode. I don't have anything else left to mention. We went through what we needed to do, so you have anything you want to mention before I close this off?
Just one thing.
Mm.
Canada!
Yes, was Canada Day this week, so
Canada Day.
Happy Canada Day to
happy belated Canada Day to
any Canadians out there listening. With that said,
and that was also to you, Morimska. Canada.
We'll see you next week, everyone. Goodbye.
Take care, y'all. See ya.